Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup Podcast. I'm Anthony Castrovince, and I am joined by Richard Justice. And Richard, boy, I don't know about you, but my head is spinning from all this hot stove action. You got Doug Fister going to the Rangers. That's all you got. That's enough. We could do a whole podcast about the Doug Fister signing. We won't. We could. But yeah, it's obviously an extremely slow moving market. We actually got away with a legitimate Thanksgiving holiday where, you know, GMs weren't making trades or signings, the night before Thanksgiving, nothing unusual there. It's been pretty quiet for several weeks now.
I still think it's going to be a chaotic offseason, that there's going to be a ton of action. I mean, the dynamics are there for it to be great. You know, we've got the National League MVP on the block. We've got the most compelling Japanese player ever that is going to be considering his options. You know, we have a bunch of teams like the Giants, the Cardinals, the Mariners, the Phillies, the Braves, all ready to do something. You know, I think one thing holding it up is obviously we're going to wait on Stanton. Otani is going to pick a winner. And then Scott Boras, who has Hosmer, Moustakas, J.D. Martinez, and Arrieta, is very methodical about the way he moves. But I think ultimately, when the dominoes start to fall, and I don't think Doug Fister, as much as you and I both love the guy, I don't think that was the domino we're looking for. But at some point, all heck's going to break loose, and it is going to be a great offseason. Anthony guarantees it.
Oh, I absolutely guarantee it. I mean, you're right. The show Ohtani stuff is enough for me. That could be the entire offseason. It's such a fascinating process, and we're going to get into that quite a bit with Jim Duquette here in just a minute. But that alone is such a fun process. And then, by the way, as you said, the reigning NL MVP is very much on the trading block, so that's a lot of fun. But sometimes in November in recent years, we've seen a rush towards the second tier, even third tier guys, just because teams are looking for value and have better ways of assessing value. But even that, there's kind of been a spanner in the works. I think in general, there's been a lot of distractions in the game with a lot of contending teams had major staff assignments to fill. The Yankees are still looking for a manager, and we'll talk about that a little later. So there was a lot of that process going on. So a lot of things kind of gumming up the works here.
Yeah, and I think I wonder if the fact that Boras is so methodical about the way he does things, is that going to up the market for Lance Lynn, for Lorenzo Cain, for Alex Cobb? Although I would think the market for those guys is going to be fine anyway. And I hope people understand that what we're seeing with Ohtani, this guy's going to change the game forever. You know, you and I have heard scouts forever argue about some of these college players that say pitched on Friday night and played the outfield on Saturday. They would always debate, should this guy be a hitter or a pitcher? Well, you know, starting with the Rays taking Brendan McKay last year from Louisville, who's doing both, playing first base, DHing and pitching. I think teams are going to look at it differently. We don't know how it's going to work, but teams now are committed to finding a way to make it work. So when we're done with this offseason, a lot of stuff is going to happen. A lot of interesting players are going to change teams. It's just that, get started now, boys.
All right, let's bring in our colleague Jim Duquette here to talk about the hot stove market's two principal figures, Giancarlo Stanton and Shohei Ohtani. And Duke, yeah, just kind of a general thought. First of all, I love that the players hold the cards here in both of these cases. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton has a full trade veto power. Shohei Ohtani, it's not just whoever posts the most money like it was in the days of Yu Darvish, for example. It's, you know, every team can post the $20 million, and we'll see which one the Nippon Ham Fighters accept. And ultimately, it's going to come down to where he wants to go. And that's really, for both these guys, it's not about money. It's about finding the right fit. Stanton can turn down trades if he doesn't feel like it's a place where he's going to be comfortable or can compete or what have you. And Ohtani, of course, it's just an absolutely fascinating process, which we'll dig into here. But we've really never seen anything like this Ohtani situation where there's reports in recent days where, you know, his team is asking all the 30 major league teams to fill out this 7-point questionnaire, explain, you know, your approach to player development, to medical training, your facilities, your spring training facility, how are you going to handle my cultural assimilation to your city, coming over from Japan? How am I going to integrate into your organization? And you know, why just sell yourself? I love this. I love this process because so often free agency is about, you know, the agent working it and distributing the, you know, the statistical analysis he's put together and all this stuff. And for the player, basically, let's face it, it usually just comes down to who has the most money here. Where with Ohtani, you know, he's forsaking perhaps nine figures a couple of years from now to come over to MLB now. It's not a matter of money. It's a matter of the best fit.
Well, it is. And, you know, I like how you love how the players have all the cards from a front office perspective. I don't like it. But it's all about leverage at this time of the year, as you mentioned. And I think that's the interesting part is, you know, for both of these guys, Ohtani, you know, on that part, you know, this is so unusual. I like what the agent has decided to do. It really helps kind of narrow down the field in a quicker fashion. They only have 21 days once he's posted. It's a little less time. Every team's going to be wanting to be involved. And so it's a little bit easier way to kind of sell to the player. Hey, listen, here's what everyone has kind of come up with. Here are the differences. Here are the similarities. And allow him to help, you know, sort things out a little bit quicker and a little bit easier than having to hear 30 pitches. Because every team is going to be in on Ohtani. So I think it helps narrow down. And I think the key will be, you know, getting to a manageable number, five or six or seven teams along the way.
Yeah, and just to reset for those listening, so there's a new posting agreement being worked on. The Players Association with Japanese professional ball with Major League Baseball. This will be voted on by the owners on Friday. The posting price would have a $20 million maximum, and you would suspect the Ohtani's club will set it at that $20 million maximum. Once that price is met, Ohtani and that team that he selects would have 21 days to negotiate a deal, and every team would be subject to the international signing bonus pool. The Rangers actually have the most money available in that pool, $3.535 million. The Yankees are next to $3.5 million. The Twins are next to $3.07 million. But, you know, again, if this was strictly a matter of money, Ohtani would be holding out for another couple years when he could be free and clear of that bonus pool and sign for whatever amount he's worth in the open market. So again, this is about finding the right fit baseball wise, and that's why it's so fun. So Duke, as a former GM of the Mets and just, you know, knowing so many people who are involved in this process, how would you approach this? First of all, I would be available for any of these clubs, you know, to be their professional writer on this questionnaire, but you gotta get creative with it, don't you?
Yeah, you really do. And I like, Jerry DePoto, who I've known a long time, I like his approach. He's been planning for this for over a year, you know, or at least a year, thinking and hoping that he's going to be out there and available. He's going to use the former players that were Japanese-based, from the Japanese league that were huge parts of their organization. And obviously, you know, guys like Iwakuma and Ichiro are main guys, of course, and use them in the recruiting process. But, it's beyond that. I mean, he can sell the organization and the opportunity to win, but it's hard for a player coming in from overseas, especially over in Japan. With my experience is, where do you live? Where is there a place where you'll easily assimilate into the community, into the city? That's a little bit more a more difficult task. And when I signed a couple of players, the one that was highest profile was Kaz Matsui. We spent a lot of time talking to him about areas where he would live in New York and how he would assimilate, how we would help him with translators, whether it was a personal a guy that could be kind of around him to help with errands on a daily basis who also could help translate, whatever that might be and entail. And I think that those are some of the basics, but you can get creative as an organization, as a team, in deciding, you know, what you want to do with him. Certainly playing time, both pitching and hitting, is going to play a factor into it. But, I mean, I even kidded about it, but I was half serious about creating a food stand of Ohtani's choice in the ballpark, if that's something that he would have interest in. You're not quite sure what the level of interest is there, but I would even go as far as that. Whatever he needs, whatever he wants, if he thinks that's something that would add to his brand, then I'm all for it.
And we know, I mean, the between the posting fee and, you know, the small amount of international bonus pool money that this is going to cost a team, it's worth it to go whatever extra mile you can go beyond that, whether it be, as you said, food choices or what have you. But, you mentioned it, this is so unique, not just the process, but the player and the potential for this guy to pitch every fifth day and maybe serve as a DH or an outfielder on days he's not taking the hill. I don't know. I'm still curious to see if that element works or if it ultimately, you know, it turns out to be an experiment and eventually a team just says, look, you know, you're a pitcher. Let's focus on that. But, you know, obviously this guy can throw the ball 100 miles an hour, can hit it 500 feet. What do you feel about how a team would or could make that work at the major league level?
Yeah, I think this is going to be fascinating because I think, you know, to be transparent, you know, it's difficult if you're a National League team to admit that you're going to have him play the field the four other days that he's not pitching. Or if you decide to go to six-man rotation, he plays, you know, on those other days. It's just, it's going to be very difficult from a physical standpoint. I think the number one reason that you're signing him is because of the dominant arm that he has, big fastball, the heart-breaking stuff. He has a chance to be a true number one or number two starter. So, you know, sorting that out, but also trying to talk to him about the opportunity to hit if you're a National League team, it doesn't exist as much. I mean, you can tell him, you know, okay, on the days that we're going to play in American League parks, but I don't think that gives you this real true sense or meets the desire that he has to get as many at-bats as possible. So I think inherently, because there's a two-way player, the American League teams primarily are going to have the advantage in, you know, Yankees, Texas, Seattle. I'd even throw Toronto in there. I wouldn't discount Minnesota. Those are all teams that I think, you know, will make a big pitch for. And, you know, it becomes creative. I talked to Thad Levine, the GM of the Twins, the other day. His hope was to sign a guy like Yu Darvish, who he had a friendship with when he was assistant GM in Texas. But would that signing of Darvish help convince Ohtani to go to Minnesota as well, so he's not there alone? All those things kind of go through your mind as a front office executive.
Yeah, I think the casual fan or media member, we kind of assume, well, he'll probably just sign with the Yankees, let's face it. But, you know, you make good points, and I think there are great arguments for a wide swath of clubs. And you're right, American League in particular, because of the DH element. You know, you mentioned Thad Levine's time with the Rangers, and the Rangers jump out as potentially a great fit here with the way Yu Darvish so, you know, easily assimilated there and their ground forces in Japan. And so it's not just because they have the most international bonus pool money. There's other situations that make that a great fit. Just because it's a level playing field and every team is somewhat involved at some level. You know, the Rays are really interesting just because Brendan McKay, their draft pick in 2017, they already have a two-way player in their system. So there's a real willingness and desire to make that work. So that would be interesting. But of course, it's all going to come down to what Ohtani's preference turns out to be. None of us has enough intel on the player at this moment to know what that'll be. So that'll be fascinating. But another player, of course, as we mentioned, who kind of controls his fate here is Giancarlo Stanton. Our own John Paul Morosi was reporting on Monday that the Dodgers are viewed as Stanton's preferred destination, and they are among the approved teams on the list he conveyed to Marlins officials. So, Duke, you know, this could evolve. You know, his list, as it were, could evolve as the offseason evolves and his trade talks evolve. But if the Dodgers are his number one fit, and I'm Giancarlo Stanton, I'm waiting until I'm absolutely positively sure that it's not going to work. It's not going to work with the Dodgers before I would accept anything else. But you know, we know that there are probably teams that are better fits in terms of, you know, factors like the luxury tax. Obviously, you know, the Dodgers are already expected to exceed the luxury tax in 2018, and they'll be paying a 50% tax on any overages. So, you know, Giancarlo Stanton's contract in that framework just doesn't work particularly well. But there are other teams that might be better fits from a financial perspective or just a sheer willingness to part with whatever prospects it'll take to get this done. But what's your view of you know, the Stanton situation and the difficulty that the Marlins face in not only just moving that money, but also, you know, dealing with the fact that Stanton has veto power here?
Yeah, this is a tough situation for the Marlins. And I think that, you know, I went through this once with a star player in Miguel Tejada. And once the player, you know, makes that announcement, like he wanted to be traded. So I lost a little bit of leverage, but I didn't get a lot of what I thought were fair offers. And so I pulled back and I told him, we're just not going to trade you. Seems like the Marlins don't have that as an option or as a weapon. I think, as I say, weapon, leverage is the most important thing in these type of situations. I think that Giancarlo, you're trying to serve a couple different masters here. You're trying to serve your owner, if you're Michael Hill, the GM of the Marlins, trying to shave payroll, but you also don't want to put your situation, your organization, in a lesser spot if you can help it. And so there's that fine line of getting as much money off the books as you can and getting back as much talent as you can in return, and identifying those teams and then going back to Giancarlo Stanton and say, listen, I've worked the phones, I've worked the teams. The best thing for us and as an organization is sending him to, let's say, an X team. Let's say it's the Cardinals in this scenario. I would like you to approve the trade to the Cardinals. I haven't been able to work out the same type of arrangement with the Dodgers and play to, you know, Stanton's ability, to go into his ability to decide from there. Ask him, plead with him, whatever you need to do to get that deal done. In the end, like you said, he holds the cards, so he can really hold you up. But I think you try to let him know this. We're rebuilding, and you don't want to come back to the Marlins. You're not going to have much protection around you, because if we can't trade, you're going to have to trade, you know, your compadres, Ozuna, and Yelich, and Martin right. Prado, and Dee Gordon. So that's the trick of it. You don't want to have to get there and force it, but I think with Stanton, it becomes about the relationship that you built up with him over the last couple of years.
Well, you know, the doomsday scenario, I think, for a lot of us is they're just not able to work something out that appeases all sides. And we are talking about Giancarlo Stanton's trade market for the entirety of the offseason, because that's a very real possibility. When you talk about $295 million and they want to recoup prospect value and he has to approve it, there's a lot of hurdles to cross there. I know we're all itching to see this get done, and because he'd be such a huge addition wherever he goes, and it'd be so much fun to see him on a legitimate contender in 2018. But, you know, there's legitimate hurdles that have to be clear for that to happen.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think the key is, you know, the teams that seem to be involved are all teams that are aggressive, that want to be in the mix, want to be in the hunt for the postseason. And one team that I think, you know, the biggest question mark, at least for me, are the Giants right now, because they had such a horrible season. They have the second pick overall in the draft next year. They're trying to turn things around, but they also don't have a ton of prospect depth. That's the one spot. If I'm Stanton, it's close to home, but you want to, you know, you want to win now, and you want to make sure you're going to be viable in the future too. I think there are better options. You mentioned the Dodgers. I think the Cardinals. Cardinals certainly are aggressive and have the prospects and the willingness to take on the salary. They, to me, are the best fit of them all for the Marlins. The best fit for Stanton might be the Dodgers because it's close to home. So I'm fascinated to go, and there's always a sleeper team. I don't know if the Red Sox, you'd call them a sleeper team, but I also, you know, there's also that possibility that you could end up going to Boston in that type of situation.
All right, Duke, great insights as always. Thanks for doing this.
All right, man. Good to talk.
All right, thanks to Duke for that conversation, and bring in Richard Justice again here. And Richard, obviously it's not all about Shohei Ohtani and Giancarlo Stanton. There is some other activity to be taken care of here in the coming weeks. And one thing, as we mentioned earlier, is the Yankees manager job, which is still not filled. On one hand, you can understand they can take all the time in the world with this process, because it's not like they're competing with other clubs for a manager pool right now. It's you know, they are the only game in town at this point. And it's obviously a major assignment. It's a win now club. It's an interesting assignment just because of who they got rid of, and Joe Girardi, very successful, but, you know, very clear that they want to go to a deeply analytical, kind of embedded with the front office mindset. So far, the Yankees they've interviewed five candidates: Aaron Boone, Hensley Mullins, Rob Thompson, Eric Wedge, and Chris Woodward. So there could be other interviews. I know they're keeping the candidate pool basically under 10 as we move forward here, but it doesn't seem like they have a firm deadline on when they want to get this done, but this process has begun again with the Thanksgiving holiday in the rear view.
Maybe this is the way you should do it. Maybe you should just start interviewing people and let the candidates give you a timetable rather than you set a timetable. And I think one of the things, I don't know if you agree with me on this, I'm pretty sure one of the things Brian Cashman is doing is collecting information. You know, he knows Robbie Thompson, but Eric Wedge has worked, you know, has managed the Indians and the M's. Hensley Mullins worked side by side with Bruce Bochy. Aaron Boone's seen the game from a media standpoint. Chris Woodward has seen the way Andrew Friedman and the Dodgers do up close. And I think he's probably picking people's brains to see what we can learn. What do we maybe is there something in a manager we need or an organization we need we didn't know? I mean, I know Chris Woodward just a little bit. He's 41 years old. He is a very impressive guy, and you and I both know Aaron Boone, and that would be such a unique hire. But, you know, I don't know if you agree with this, but it just seems like all the things we used to measure a managerial candidate. How long did you manage? How long did you work? Did you manage in winter ball? Did you manage in the minor leagues? I think what they want now is a guy who's smart, a guy who deals with people, and a guy who has an open mind to collaborating on the data that the guy has to translate to the players. In that way, it's completely different. Just give me a smart guy, a guy that's good with people, and we'll figure out the rest of it. What do you think?
Well, they might be just punking us, and maybe they're not going to have a manager in 2018. They're just going to prove that this game is so advanced, and the front office has so much input now that you don't even need a manager.
How do you think that would be? You know how many meetings, how many trips to the mound we had last year, right. and all that. Can you imagine? Sorry, we have a committee meeting over here. Give us Joe West. Give us a couple of minutes. We'll be right back to you.
No, I think all things considered, I think, and listen, I can make a case. The five guys we mentioned here, I can make a case for all of them. And I go back a long ways with Eric Wedge. I covered him here in Cleveland and all those guys. I can make a case for all of them. But for me, if we're talking about forward thinking, can relate to players and relate to a front office, media savvy in that market. And again, that forward-thinking, analytical, you know, open-minded, modern-day managerial approach, I think this is Aaron Boone's job. That's what I think.
And he played for McKeon, he played for Torrey, and he played for Eric Wedge. So, you know, maybe there's a combo here.
That would be – if I could go back and tell 2006 me covering the Indians with Aaron Boone at third base and Eric Wedge in the dugout that, you know, these guys would be candidates for the same job someday. I'd get a kick out of that. And who knows? They could end up working together because from what our colleague Mark Feinzen suggests, they might be looking at Wedge as a potential bench coach candidate, you know, irregardless of who gets the manager job. So – it's really a fascinating process. It's kind of fun that it's dragging out this long because it gets you to really dig into it a little more. I don't know if they necessarily want or need to have someone in place by the winter meetings. I guess to fill that Q&A session for the reporters, they need somebody. But
And you know they're letting the candidates speak to the press. And you know the thing is, this is such. You and I have a high regard for Brian Cashman, and Hal Steinbrenner is very forward-thinking, very analytical. And the idea that you would replace a successful manager, you just don't do that. And it just tells you, you know, the thing your coach always told you, well, we're not going to accept in victory what we wouldn't accept in defeat. They looked at their organization and said, you know what, we need a different voice. And we think we can find somebody that would give us that different voice and would be an upgrade. It's a very gutsy move, and it'll be fascinating to see how it ends.
Yeah, there are a lot of gutsy moves that took place in the managerial front this offseason with Dusty Baker, John Farrell. You talk about three East Division managers who skipper their teams to playoff appearances in 2017. All put out to pasture by those clubs in the offseason. So it's a really fascinating development and a fascinating situation there in the Bronx. Another thing I want to touch on you here today, Richard, is Mike Moustakas' free agency. I just figure, every so often on this podcast, we'll kind of dig into a guy who's out there and what might be ahead for him. Moustakas is a very interesting figure in this free agency because he's fairly young, 29 years old, coming off a 38 home run season, which is historically significant. Because he finally broke Steve Balboni's single season record there in Kansas City. That was my favorite record in all of sports, finally went down. So now the new record in Kansas City is 38. A 117 OPS plus over the last 3 years, plays a premium defensive position at third base, plays it well. I'll be curious to see where this guy goes. Some teams that I'll rattle off some teams, but then you let me know where you think the best fits are for him, okay? These are teams I could see as conceivable fits. The Cardinals, the Giants, the Mets. I got the Angels, although they've made some public noise in recent days that they're really just looking for a platoon partner with Louis Valbuena, who's also a left-handed bat, so I guess that won't work. He could go back to the Royals. The Phillies or the Braves are both rebuilding teams, of course, but they both, you know, have a position available for him. And again, him being 29 years old, maybe it's a player you sort of build around. And then we're just talking about the Yankees managerial job. And I guess you could conceivably make an argument for the Yankees, although, you know, Chase Headley's still in the mix there, and or they could bring, if they're going to sign somebody at third base, I think they'd probably just bring back Todd Frazier. But I don't know, among those teams, or maybe you have some other team in mind, what are some of your thoughts on Moustakas's, you know, best fits?
You know, from day one, I thought the Angels, but like you said, they are sending signals that it's not going to be that. And I thought maybe Boston might make some sense if, you know, you go for both Hosmer and Moustakas, you're going to get one of those guys, and then you can figure out third base if Hosmer is the guy you sign. Mm. The Giants make a lot of sense, but they need a center fielder and they need a left fielder, and there's only so many dollars to spend. You know, the Braves have a young guy at third. The Phillies have a young guy at third. I think the Braves and Phillies are going to be active. And if I had to put a quarter on a team now, I would go coin toss with Braves and Phillies, maybe slight edge to the Phillies, because the Phillies feel like they're ready to take a step forward. And while they do need pitching, they do have they have basically no money committed to the payroll in 2017. I guess what I'm saying is I have no idea where he's going to end up. There's so, well, you know, there's so many moving parts after you get through Stanton and you get through Ohtani, and then you look at Hosmer, and we'll see. That's part of the fun part of the Hot Stove League.
Yeah, and Moustakas, obviously, he's not going to command Hosmer-type money, or at least Hosmer-type asking price from the start, but yeah, those two guys are kind of inextricably tied in our minds still. And they came up together and they led the Royals to the World Series together. You could see one or both of them re-signing with the Royals. I don't rule out that possibility. I do think that, I mean, Hosmer's market is particularly fascinating because they're aiming so high, based on his age and the leadership and the charisma, things that are, you know, kind of intangibles as opposed to just, you know, the production, which at times for first base, you know, it hasn't been typical first base production. So I don't know. I think his market would be really interesting and could fall back to the Royals to the point where they are the team really bidding with their hearts as much as their heads. And maybe that happens with Moustakas as well, where, you know, the Royals are a prominent figure here just because they love the guy so much.
I would be rooting for that. I would be rooting for the both of those guys to stay in Kansas City, because it's going to look strange to see those guys in another uniform. And I know it's going to be strange for Ned Yost and Dayton Moore and all the guys still there. But, you know, you can't keep everybody together. Hosmer, to me, is such a perfect fit in Boston. You know, that left-handed swing to hit the ball the other way off the green monster. But they're both going to have I know, you know, Scott Boras is going to play the heck out of the market. They're both going to have, I would think, a ton of options.
Well, if they get a ton of options, they'll make a ton of money. And speaking of people making a ton of money, how about the Houston Astros? A full share, this was announced on Monday, a full share for the players' pool for the World Series champions was $438,000. $438,901.57. It's that last 57 cents that really puts you over the top. The Astros issued 60 full shares and 9.23 partial shares and 4 cash awards. I know you received one of those cash awards as a proud Houstonian, Richard, so congrats on
that. $2.75. I want to thank Dallas Keuchel for his contribution. But, you know, this – it's a good time to be a baseball player. This smashes the record of the 2014, was it the Giants, 392. So the previous record had been 392,000. Now you jumped to almost 439,000. That's pretty good. And that's something to play for. And, you know, on top of all the emotion, Jose Altuve did it. This is what it's like in Houston right now. You know, forget the money. Jose Altuve did an autograph signing last week. People showed up after midnight to get in line to get his autograph. And they had the premiere of the World Series documentary. It was a big, rowdy crowd there. So they're down here, they're still riding the wave.
Yeah, quite a wave to ride. You know, guys talk about we just playing for that ring, playing for that title, and the back of their minds are thinking, and that postseason share, that would be really nice as well. Even the Dodgers, as the runners-up in the World Series, full share for them was worth $259,722.14. So they are doing quite well for themselves as well. And all the teams that reached the postseason got some kind of financial reward for that. So congrats to all of them. But that'll do it for today's edition of the Morning Lineup podcast. My thanks, as always, to Richard Justice, and we'll talk to you soon.